No matter who your congressperson winds up being in the redistricting,
you will respect my authority.
It's still Joe Thomas in the Morning on WCHV.
Senate lawyers, guns, and money. Joe Thomas in the Morning. The General Assembly has convened. And the session really gets, and they've been meeting and getting things set up. We played you some clips of Todd Gilbert, Speaker of the House, and his press conference, Rob Bell, on the leadership. Can you imagine a Courts of Justice committee with Rob Bell on it? It's great. But joining us on the Newsmakers line right now for a special look into the General Assembly is somebody everyone in this area is keenly aware of, one of his pre-filed bills, but he's got a bunch of them on school safety and firearm ownership protection. He is Delegate Tim Anderson of the 83rd District. Delegate Anderson, I guess, you know, I may be the first person get to call you that since you just got sworn in after defeating Nancy Guy last year. How are you doing this morning, sir? Did we lose him? Oh, crud. Then that was him ringing in on the other line. Terrific. I don't know. We've been having this. There was a discussion about teleworking, and after what happened last Friday, the comm systems leading in and out of this building have been just horrific. And they're glad, as I pointed out quickly while we were trying to reconnect with Delegate Anderson, that I thought it was a little ironic that there was the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors holding a virtual meeting with Lumen and CenturyLink over the internet service while the internet service was still out for so many people that they couldn't participate. But I think we've reestablished with Delegate Tim Anderson. Delegate Anderson, thank you so much for calling back in. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, good morning. Sorry about that.
No. We've been the building has have this internet and telephone system. We're in a good spot, but that means they keep switching us out to help bolster service in other spots. So it's not your fault at all. I appreciate it. So I was saying in lead up that you defeated Nancy Guy in November of last year. So you this may be your first interview as Delegate Tim Anderson, not Delegate Elect. How has your first experience with the General Assembly as a member been so far this week?
You know, I'm on the dream team. I mean, if you're a conservative Republican like I am, to be able to come up here in this setting with a incoming full statewide ticket and a majority in the House, it really just couldn't be better. I mean, obviously, the one thing that I always caution constituents and conservative voters to remember, though, is that while our hearts are on the same path as everybody else's, that we would love to repeal pretty much everything they've done over the past 2 years, we still have a Democratic Senate, and they're going to act as a firewall on how we, you know, what actually we can get done. And so, but despite that, it's really exciting. And I'll tell you what, take a picture. Look at the pictures of the House of Delegates yesterday and the Senate. And, you know, I feel bad for my Republican colleagues in the Senate. I mean, they're in plastic cages over there, which is symbolic. It's so symbolic of how the Commonwealth has been in the past 2 years. You know, we have no masks in the House. You can wear them if you want to, but there's not even mask requirements. So it's just so symbolic.
When you talk about the Senate and the firewall, I mean, and this has bothered me for some time, and someday this process issue is going to be addressed. It's a blind spot in the Constitution that allows these committees to be so overwhelmingly partisan in a body that is 21-19. And so representatively, all these committees should be basically 50-50, and maybe the chair is of the majority party. But when it's so evenly split, to have committees that are 7-4, And as you said, then you really have to work on winning over a bunch of people, not just one, to common sense. It becomes an uphill battle. Talk about your history and how you can do that kind of deal making and handshaking to win over some Democrats in the Senate.
Well, I think for me, you know, it's just human nature. If the Senate just passed a law last year They're not going to undo it this year without some horse trading, and that's above my pay grade. So, you know, what, as a freshman coming in, what I'm trying to do is look at what they've done and just point a couple of the things that don't make sense. For instance, they passed that earned sentencing credit bill where people that are in prison for nonviolent offenses get an enhanced sentencing credit. They only have to serve up to maybe just they get 40% knocked off their sentence if they're doing good time and it's nonviolent. So they just passed that. So for us to say we want you to repeal that, probably not going to happen. But what they included in that, inadvertently or maybe intentionally, I don't know, is people who possess child pornography, right? And so, you know, you take a, you know, one, I have a bill that says, hey, you guys, we need to pull child pornography possessors out of this. You know, somebody who steals a car is one thing, but somebody who has child pornography is a different thing. And so I, what I've done is I've gone through what they've done, and in my 19 bills that I've filed, every one of them has some adjustment to what they've done. And I have asked for a couple of total repeals, and I think you want to talk about one of those today. But you know, I think that that's how we're going to get things done. It's going to let them save face while letting us get some things done that actually make sense. Because what the Democrats did, they kind of equated to the Tasmanian devil on Looney Tunes. They just ran through the countryside as fast as they could and got as much passed as they could because they knew their time was short. And, you know, it just, a lot of stuff needs to be fixed. And so I'm hoping we're not going to see repeals of a lot of things without us giving something to them that they really want, but maybe we can make it better until 2023 when we can actually take control of the Senate as well.
Well, let's talk about the one that particularly compelled me to call you, Tim, and we're visiting with Delegate Tim Anderson, tim4va.com, is the repeal of the local authority to ban constitutionally protected handguns. They haven't taken that away yet in public spaces like county parks. And here in Albemarle County, they grabbed the bull by the horns as soon as they were given permission to, and said, "Yeah, let's ban firearms in our county parks and our county office buildings." And so you have a bill that would rescind that. And when it happened, I was talking to Philip Van Cleve of the Virginia Citizens Defense League. And he said, "You know, the problem is you make this patchwork where Greene County on one side of a line." Everything is constitutionally protected, and you cross over into Albemarle, and all of a sudden you could be charged with a felony for handgun possession.
Yeah, well, you know, it's amplified even in a place like Hampton Roads, where you have Virginia Beach, which is a conservative city, and Norfolk and Portsmouth, which are quite liberal. And so, you know, you got a guy who's a building contractor, and, you know, he goes to pull permits, you know, and he has a gun on him. In one jurisdiction, he's fine. In another jurisdiction, he's a criminal. Mm-hmm. Look, I mean, here, it's really simple. I mean, first of all, you know, the Democrats said common sense gun reform, but that they didn't mean that. Nobody meant that. And you can see that by what they passed. There's nothing logical about giving a jurisdiction, a city, a county, a town, some kind of authority to supersede the state law. And now what it does is it basically creates a whack-a-mole scenario for anybody who's carrying concealed, because they find themselves in a position where they're lawfully carrying a firearm under Virginia law, and then you happenstance into one of the 187 different places in Virginia, and now you're in a park and you're breaking the law. And my thing is that if we're going to infringe on the Constitution, because this is what this is, if we're going to do it, it has to be a statewide uniform thing. So the rules are the rules, and everybody knows if you're in Bristol or Virginia Beach or Fairfax, we know what you can and you can't do, and we don't have to second guess what some town council did that would make my right even more restricted because I happen to be here. So it doesn't make sense. It doesn't promote safety. It's basically just to make lawful gun owners criminals, and that's what this ultimately is about. And so I think that they know that. I don't know how we're going to get them to agree to it without giving something up that they want. But it's ridiculous. It's the worst one that they passed in 2021. And I'm hoping to at least put it on the record. You know, I think I'll get it through the House.
Oh, yeah.
You know, then it'll be a pleasure to go over to the Senate and put them on the record in these committees of, you know, where they are. And, you know, we know there'll be the Democrats saying one thing and then Republicans saying another. But it's, you know, there, you might see a crack. You know, you don't know until you ask.
I mean, there are members of the Senate who see this patchwork, this mix and match hashtag that they're creating as just bad. And they wouldn't want it to be enforced the other way, where something they like to have happen is illegal the county over. There, you also have a bill that would remove the one handgun a month law, which is another popular one around here that you've pre-filed. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I'm a gun shop owner, and so I know a thing or two about this. Okay. So if you come into my gun shop with a concealed handgun permit, you can buy as many pistols as you want, 50. And that's legal under Virginia law as it stands. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have one, then you can only buy one every month. And again, this is another law they passed that just doesn't have any math that makes sense to it. There's no evidence anywhere by any source that says somebody who does not have a concealed handgun permit is more likely to commit a crime than somebody who does. And even further, there's no evidence further than that that says somebody who doesn't have a concealed handgun permit has, and who buys two, is likely to use that second gun in a crime. And so it's just unbelievable what that bill actually does, because it's basically saying you can't buy more than one gun unless you basically pay a poll tax, which is your concealed handgun permit fee. Right. Once you pay your concealed handgun permit fee, you know, your $50 to the courts, and you comply with getting your permit, we'll let you do whatever you want here. But it's nonsense. There's no evidence. And then most importantly, as a gun shop owner, if you come into a gun shop and you buy two guns, we have to report that immediately to the ATF. So the ATF gets a record from the gun shop that says, hey, this person bought two guns at the at the same time. And the ATF can look for that for patterns to see if this person is actually just buying two guns because they want two guns, or if the person's engaging in some kind of straw purchases. So it's just absolute. It was unnecessary, and I think that what's going to be most enjoyable about that is I have the experience of being a gun shop owner to say, you all don't even know what you're talking about up here, because this is not something that the federal government does or that they need. And we're already reporting these transactions to the federal government same day. So if there's something wrong going on, they have the resources and capacity to see this much more globally than just, you know, what happened on one gun shop.
Delegate Tim Anderson is on with us, just sworn in, you know, just getting started, General Assembly special here. And you also have a couple of school resource bills. Pardon me. Especially the one that would require school districts to enter into an agreement with local law enforcement. Tell us about that one, because I know a lot of folks feel, you know, that our kids are still unsafe in schools.
Yeah. So, you know, it's pretty simple. We have to have SROs, school resource officers, in every middle and high school in Virginia. I mean, there's no conversation that doesn't end that way. And most school systems already have those, except places like Charlottesville, where, you know, they believe police are bad for children. And so they've kicked them out. And so basically, we need to make sure that there's a mandate that school resource officers are embedded in every school. And, you know, I mean, I understand the black and brown arguments that police, you know, they don't want their kids getting arrested and, you know, school to prison pipeline things. And I'm totally agreeable to, you know, restricting what the police officer's core mission is in the school to be school security and intervening in felony offenses and threat assessments. You know, we can certainly, you know, redefine the role of the school resource officer. But bottom line, you know, if there's a school shooting in a building, you want a police officer in the building. If there's a massive riot that occurs in the building because of, you know, a huge group of kids start creating a huge fight, you need a police officer there to be able to use that authority to disperse that. It's just how it is. And although we have, you know, although school shootings aren't every day, and thank God, you know, big, massive fights are, and big, massive disruptions are, and felonies occur in schools every day. We have statistics from the Department of Education that 325 handguns were brought into schools last year. And, you know, that's 325 felonies in Virginia schools, you know, that are happening just right there. So we have to have police there to be able to, you know, to be able to deal with the serious things that are happening in the schools. And we also need them there for threat assessment teams so that when a kid's acting in such a way that would be threatening, we don't see a repeat of what happened in Michigan where some liberal knucklehead administrators say, oh, this kid's not in bad shape. You know, the police officer, SRO, in that equation wasn't even part of that analysis. And, you know, if we have that situation in Virginia, I want a police officer in the room being able to make that threat assessment as well to determine if this kid's just being a kid or this kid's actually a real threat.
Tim Anderson, delegate just in there, and I know you have, you know, you've sought out, but, you know, around this area, you know, names like Rob Bell, Nick Freitas, Bryce Reeves, Mark Peek, Chris Runyon, great folks to, especially in the firearms world, you get with Nick. And I'm sure you have, but I appreciate your visit and thank you so much for doing what you do. And we'll keep, and keep us on speed dial and let us know what we can do to help shepherd some of these through by calling our senators that might be, standing in the way when it gets to crossover.
I certainly will. Nick Freitas' office is directly next door to mine, so if you're ever up there, stop by and say hello.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Tim. Yeah, he's in a good neighborhood already. Thank you, sir. You have a great morning.
Take care, bye.
No supply chain blocking here. Guaranteed delivery of your news at the top of every hour. Seville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.